Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, Newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, Newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at Newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night. Sometimes going to the grocery store can be chaotic. There doesn't seem to be enough time to check the list, make sure everything is there, search for the best prices, and take the time to make sure you got the best quality meat. So, let ButcherBox help you out. Giving you peace of mind, ButcherBox delivers high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust straight to your door. No grocery carts required. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or hormones, 100% grass-fed, free-range, and crate-free. What more can you ask for? What about free shipping, customized box plans, exclusive member deals, recipe inspirations, tips, and tricks? You really can't go wrong with ButcherBox. Sign up at butcherbox.com/morningcup and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/morningcup and use code morningcup to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning.
Cup of murder.
Today's story is one that many of us watched unfold in real time on the news. On April 19, 2013, one suspect in the famed Boston Marathon bombing died while police pursued him and his brother. Two men who would forever be known in our history for the tragic attack at the prestigious event. So if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. On April 15, 2013, runners from all over gathered for the 117th annual Boston Marathon when suddenly, without warning, two separate bombs detonated about 210 yards apart at the finish line. The first blast went off at 2:49 p.m., just outside Marathon Sports on Boylston Street, while the second exploded just 14 seconds later, one block further west, nearly 3 hours after the winning runner crossed the finish line in victory. At the time, more than 5,700 runners were still in the race, many of whom, and in sight, became victims. As the windows of the surrounding buildings were blown out, glass peppering the streets and sidewalks below, filled with both spectators and racers, rescue workers and medical personnel on hand for the marathon began immediately administering aid as more fire, police, and medical units were dispatched to the scene. Police began diverting the remaining runners to Boston Common, while nearby buildings began evacuating out of fear of structural damage, and those who were injured and already assessed were quickly sent off in one of the many ambulances. While everyone sprang into action with speed and efficiency, drop bags and packages left behind as their owners fled the area led to increased fear and uncertainty as to whether or not another bomb would soon go off. This was made all the worse by the flooding of false reports and the simultaneous electrical fire at the nearby John F. Kennedy Presidential Library that was initially believed to be another bombing. In total, the two bombs killed three citizens and injured 265 others, 17 of which either lost or had to amputate various limbs. Those who lost their lives were Crystal Campbell, 29, of Massachusetts, Martin Richard, 8, also from Massachusetts, and Lingzi Liu, 23, a student originally from China studying in Boston. While the American Red Cross stepped in to help concerned loved ones receive information on the victims, the Boston Police Department set up a helpline for people to call and inquire about a victim, and Google Person Finder activated their disaster service to log any known information about missing persons. All the while, due to forced closure of several hotels near the blast zone, various citizens opened up their homes to the visiting runners and tourists, who now had nowhere to stay. With the city reeling but coming together in a massive show of kindness and resilience, local law enforcement immediately did their part, and calling in the FBI, who was assisted by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the CIA, the National Counterterrorism Center, and the Drug Enforcement Administration, an investigation into who exactly made the pressure cooker bombs began. Though initially believing the attack was led by North Korea after some escalating tensions and threats, Jeff Bauman, a man who was immediately adjacent to one of the bombs and had lost both of his legs, completely sent the case in a different direction when, from the hospital, he wrote, quote, "Bag, saw the guy, looked right at me, and gave a detailed description of not one, but two suspects." Creating images of the men believed to be the Boston bombers and circulating them far and wide, on April 18th at 5:20 p.m., just 3 days after the devastating bombing, the FBI released images of two men seen carrying backpacks and asked for the public's help in identifying them. The men, as seen in the footage, stood and watched the chaos as their homemade bombs detonated in the crowded area before walking away completely casually. Immediately, their phone lines and tip lines were flooded with possible tips, and eventually, two names rose to the top of their list: Jahar Tsarnaev and Tamerlan Tsarnaev, brothers and Chechen Kyrgyzstani Americans. After being identified, the father of the two young suspects claimed that the FBI had been watching his family for quite some time and that they visited his son's home in Cambridge 5 times as recently as 2011, claiming they said it was, quote, preventative work, afraid there might be some explosions on the streets of Boston. Finding various pieces of bomb-making items at both the blast site and a nearby landfill, authorities confirmed that the brothers made the bombs themselves using instructions found in Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula's Inspire magazine. They later learned that the bombs were triggered by remote controls typically used for toy cars. At around 7:40 p.m., just a few hours after their photos were released to the world, the Tsarnaev brothers ambushed and shot Sean A. Collier of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Police Department 6 times in an unsuccessful attempt to steal his firearm. At the time, Sean, 27, was sitting in his police car near the Massachusetts Institute of Technology campus. He was unable to recover and died shortly thereafter. Now with a fourth victim under their belt and an entire country breathing down their neck hoping for their capture, the brothers then carjacked an SUV from a nearby neighborhood and took the driver, Dun Meng, hostage. Telling the man that he was the Boston bomber and that he was responsible for killing a police officer, Tamerlan continued to drive while his brother followed behind in their Honda Civic. Finally joining together in the stolen vehicle, the brothers, it was later revealed, had, quote, decided spontaneously to make New York, more specifically Times Square, their next target. Forcing the hostage to use his ATM card and hand over $800 in cash, the brothers transferred some of the items into the stolen vehicle and then drove to a gas station in order to fill up for the long ride to Times Square. While Jahar was inside paying for their snacks, Dun Meng, fearing for his life, made a brave escape and ran as fast as he could across the street to a different gas station. Telling the clerk to call 911, he left behind his cell phone, which allowed police to track down their suspect to the city of Watertown. Shortly after midnight on April 19th, the brothers' vehicle and the stolen SUV were identified by a Watertown police officer, Joseph Reynolds, who then followed the pair while waiting for additional units to arrive as backup. Stopping at the intersection of Laurel Street and Dexter Avenue, Tamerlan suddenly got out of the SUV and immediately opened fire on Officer Reynolds and Sergeant John McClellan. While a shootout ensued, additional officers began responding to the shots fired radio transmission. And before long, a total of 200 to 300 rounds were shot, and the brothers, over the course of the seven-minute firefight, detonated at least one pressure cooker bomb and threw five, quote, crude grenades at the officers. Though described as having an arsenal of guns, Tamerlan soon ran out of ammunition and threw his empty Ruger pistol at Watertown PD Sergeant Jeffrey Pugliese, a man who reacted by tackling the suspect with the assistance of Sergeant McClellan. Seeing all of this, Jahar, the younger of the pair, drove the stolen SUV straight towards his brother and the police who were holding him down. The men tried to pull Tamerlan out of the path of the vehicle, but unable to do so, one brother ran over the other, dragged him a short distance, and then fled the scene as Tamerlan lay there injured. According to his later claims, Jahar mistakenly thought that the man on the ground was an injured officer who the other officers were performing CPR on. He said he had no clue it was his own brother. 26-year-old Tamerlan Tsarnaev was taken into custody and died inside the hospital at 1:35 a.m. A handful of officers were critically injured during the attack, and Dennis Simmons, a Boston police officer, later died on April 10, 2014, due to one of the brothers' hand grenades. While Watertown residents received automated calls asking them to stay indoors and shelter in place, a 20-block area was cordoned off in hopes of finding the now-missing 19-year-old Jahar Tsarnaev. Helicopters circled the sky, SWAT teams trolled the streets, and officers began going door-to-door searching for their bomber in what was later dubbed the first major field test of the interagency task forces that were created in the wake of September 11th. Public transit networks and most taxi services were suspended, and though the local airport did remain open, it was placed under heightened security while all of the surrounding schools, universities, and many businesses were closed down, effectively blocking their suspect in and ensuring the safety of the citizens. The boy's father spoke publicly, encouraging his son to, quote, give up. You have a bright future ahead of you. Come home to Russia. Hours after one bomber lost his life, on the evening of April 19th, just 2 hours after the shelter-in-place order was lifted, David Hennenberry, a Watertown resident just outside the search area, noticed that a tarp was loose on his parked boat. Inspecting it, he found a body lying inside, surrounded by a pool of blood, and quickly called the authorities. Surrounding the boat and verifying movement through thermal imaging on a helicopter, the figure inside started poking at the tarp, and police opened fire for a second time. Though initially claiming the exchange of fire lasted for an hour, a later report indicated that not only was the shooting far shorter than initially claimed, but when finally captured, Jahar had no weapon on him and was covered in gunshot wounds to his head, neck, legs, and hand. A later review describing the chaotic situation would state that one officer fired without the, quote, appropriate authority, and that the others followed suit, shooting into the boat until supervisors at the scene called for a ceasefire. The confusion was caused in part by the multiple agencies working the area and a lack of clearly identified command over the thousands of officers gathered. Though listed as in critical condition at the time, Jahar Tsarnaev was questioned for the next 16 hours before at some point shutting down and ceasing communication. Delivered his Miranda warning on the 22nd, days after the questioning began, there were worries that anything that might have been said beforehand would not be admissible during the trial. Eventually, Jahar told officers that he and his brother were motivated by the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, claiming they wanted to defend Islam from the U.S. and defend Muslim citizens, said that they were self-radicalized and unconnected to any other terrorist groups, and said that it was his big brother that was in charge and that he was just following his lead. Revealing the intention to attack Times Square, there were allegations that the brothers planned on suicide attacks and on targeting the Boston Pop Firework Spectacular on the 4th of July, before ultimately changing their minds, saying the prestigious race was a, quote, target of opportunity. According to a CBS report, Jahar scrawled a note on the interior wall of the boat, stating that the bombings were, quote, retribution for U.S. military action in Afghanistan and Iraq, and called the victims of the bombing, quote, collateral damage, quote, in the same way innocent victims have been collateral damage in U.S. wars around the world. A photo of the note was later used during his trial. On July 10, 2013, Jahar pleaded not guilty to the 30 charges against him. And on April 8, 2015, a jury of 8 men and 10 women convicted him on all 30 charges. He was sentenced to death on June 24th without ever issuing an apology to his victims. In 2018, an appeal was made on the grounds that a lower court judge's refusal to move the case to another city deprived Jahar of a fair trial. And on July 30th, 2020, his death sentence was reversed when they found that, during jury selection, the district court did not properly screen prospective jurors on how much they already knew about the case. Though this seemed like a blow to the case, only 3 of the 30 convictions had their sentence overturned, which left him with multiple convictions and multiple life sentences to ensure that he would remain in prison regardless of the results of the new trial. The U.S. government appealed the ruling, and in 2022, the Supreme Court reversed the decision and reinstated his death penalty. In the days following the bombing, a number of people were arrested and questioned in relation to the crime, but most were released with no further issue. That is, with the exception of Ibrahim Todashev, who was interrogated by the FBI in Orlando, Florida on May 22nd, and at some point during the questioning, was shot to death by the agent who claimed the man attacked him. According to an unnamed law enforcement official quoted by the New York Times, Ibrahim, a Chechen from Boston, allegedly confessed to a triple homicide and implicated one of the brothers as well. His father, however, said his son was innocent and that the investigators were biased against Chechens after the bombing. 3 others, Dias Kadirbayev, Azmat Tazayakov, and Robo Filipos, were arrested, charged, and convicted for the role they played in the aftermath of the Boston bombing, retrieving a backpack and laptop belonging to one of the brothers and lying to police about it. The young men, 2 of whom were still teenagers, were given various sentences. Also in the aftermath of the bombings were a number of conspiracy theories surrounding the Tsarnaev brothers. Like the claim made by Jahar's defense attorney, as well as some journalists, stating that the FBI had once tried to recruit Tamerlan as an informant in 2011, which they have denied, and that a 2011 triple murder, allegedly done by Tamerlan himself, was suppressed by the FBI in order to maintain his informant status. This has led to theories that the U.S. government knew about the planned terrorist attack, or that the bombing was made at the direction of intelligence services. There is no evidence to support this theory, but many still believe it to be true. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to A Terrible Thing Happened on April 20th. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there is always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.